Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Supernatural Substation. You are listening to the United Public Radio Network. I am your host, Eileen Pastanio. It is the 17th of November, 2017, or 2017, for those of you keeping track. And I will need to see how well you've been keeping track of the date. So I'm flying solo tonight because my good friend and co-host, Bernadine LeBlanc, is under the weather, as are most people. Let me just tell you about our guest tonight. We have Pete Haviland returning. He's a good friend in Texas. He's with Lone Star Paranormal. He's a paranormal, independent paranormal researcher and a certified hypnotist. And we are attempting to do a call-in show. So we will just going to take it by ear and see if he has some peeps out there that want to call in. The other thing that we're doing this Friday night is we're on a death watch. I don't know if he's dead yet or he's dying or maybe he died and nobody said anything yet. But Charles Manson may be dead. Of course, there were no earthquakes and there was no like peal of thunder like when Aleister Crowley died. But I've actually found some people defending him online, saying that he was, you know, labeled a mass murderer, et cetera. And he never did anything. He never killed anybody, you know, the whole thing. And well, Hitler didn't kill anybody either, even when he was in the army. But there's a lot of dead people that were inspired by Mr. Hitler. So who he will be probably will be seeing soon. Charles Manson, one of a kind, hopefully. He does remind me of somebody, though. Unfortunately, somebody that I'm related to. I mean, general appearances, but, you know, we're all crazy. So, yeah, Pete's going to be up in a few minutes. I don't know what we're going to do filling in. I know that I noticed a couple of, I'm sorry, W.S. Lewis, this is your favorite part of the show, the first 30, only you're just going to get like 15, maybe even like 4 more minutes of it. So stick around. You call it the bullshit part. Tonight, I might live up to that or down to that. Doesn't matter. Anyway, I noticed there was some sort of a new show on Destination America. I'm recording it. It's something to do with the Cecil Hotel. So if you're a cable subscriber and you have Destination America, go and DVR it. Apparently, one of the episodes in about an hour from now is covering the case of Elisa Lam, who died, was found in the water tank atop the Cecil Hotel. In fact, Bernadine and I are... possibly next week, we will, instead of just doing a roundup of the month, we may be just talking about the Elisa Lam case because it's so complicated and it crosses the boundaries of credulity for, you know, so many things to happen the way that that they did. There are some people that think, oh, it's just a plain, it's a straight up case of murder. They dumped her in the water tank. It's a straight up case of suicide. You know, she jumped in the water tank. It's supernatural. It was Richard Ramirez, another great guy. He'll be seeing Charlie later, too. Richard Ramirez lived there while he was committing the mass murders in California. So we've been thinking about just dedicating like a whole show to that, which we probably will do, depending on all things considered. Next week. So at the end of the show, usually I say this. I have a terminus tonight, and I like to promote my show usually at the end. So it's 2 a.m. Central Time. And I just tell you, hang out, get creepy. Tonight I put together, I was thinking, you know, what's kind of creepy and cold and, you know, and it's Vikings. So don't miss it tonight, 2 a.m. Central Time. Turn it on, turn it up. And I heard that it's pretty popular out there. Joe, do we have somebody on the line? Peter?
Yes.
There you are. I was just
there.
You know,
you are.
Yeah, I was just kind of BSing, waiting for you to call in. So.
I thought I heard some dangerous stuff going on in the airwaves, but I wasn't really too sure.
What, like die Charles Manson?
Yeah, that was it. That was one of them.
I can't confirm it. I mean, I saw one report. No, I mean, you know, he's been like at death's door for like 3 times in the past like month and a half. And I'm like, boy, death is having some fun with him. It's like, yeah, I'm going to take it. Mm-hmm. No, I changed my mind. Yeah, come on. I'm gonna, you know, mm-hmm. the whole thing. But a news agency out of Florida actually said that he was, but, you know, we'll hear maybe a thunderclap or an earthquake or something. Mm-hmm. Or maybe we'll just hear like, you know, like a little, and there he goes, you know, like an old fart. So.
Well, you know, what's going to end up happening. Some of these spirit box people are going to try to contact him after he passes and try to flood the internet with what they think is going on.
Yeah, they didn't have enough enough gumption to go visit him, like a Corcoran or whatever, and actually talk to him alive. So they want to talk to him when he's dead, which usually he'd be more powerful then, but he's not going to be because they're waiting on the other side. I mean, I'm joking about Hitler and Aleister Crowley and all, but there's something waiting for him on the other side. He's just people defending him, saying he never killed anybody, and, you know, and he's just pegged with these mass murders. And, you know, he's guilty of some killings prior to. I mean, he was institutionalized his whole life in prison, and he talked about killing people. Just because he didn't, you know, participate in the murders, you know, the Cielo Drive murders, whatever, didn't mean that he didn't kill anybody. Because he was a hardened criminal who I wouldn't want to be around, even if, you know, so. But anyway, I guess we'll be hearing that news soon. And you're right there. And immediately I thought about who might be doing that, but I'm not going to say any names, you know.
He should not be named.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Definitely.
He'll crawl out of the woodwork and make his presence known with all this BS. You know how it goes.
So I know. Usually, it gets kind of like pantomime theater after a while. It's like, you know, they can't think of anything new to do. You know what I mean? I mean, there's always going to be dead people, you know, but they're kind of running
pantomime
out of
theater. Oh my God.
You know, let me ask you that, because Bernadine and I have been talking people have asked us, it's like, you know, it's really plateaued out. Like there's like some new shows, right, that have come out, and they're mostly, you know, like The Haunting, you know, on the Discovery Channel and all that. But I mean, I think it's plateaued out, and you've got all the same people doing pretty much the same thing. It's just replicating everything that's been done, you know, and I feel, and Bernadine feels, that the next logical step, but I doubt this will ever happen. In fact, I know this will never happen, is to, you know, have some sort of a consortium or, you know, a group of people that's basically pleasing to everybody, which is, again, pipe dreaming. But, you know, actual neutral skeptics looking at the evidence, and everybody submit their evidence to them, like they did with the American Psychical Society, the British Psychical Research Society, you know, the old societies that still exist.
The ASPR, the Rhine Research Center.
Well, yeah, I mean, don't
well,
you think...
Know, well, you know, well, you know, Lloyd and myself and a gentleman from up in Dallas, we tried to get a consortium together to do just that. And to be quite honest, you know, we were looking at teams to, you know, to come in and be representatives for the different states. And you would be surprised that a lot of people didn't really want to do that because there was a lot of ego stuff. I mean, it's just like, you know, who's going to be in it?
I'm not surprised.
You know, who's going to be in it? You know, or they didn't want to be part of it because they wanted to be the one that was the one that called, you know, a spade, and you know, and finally it just got to the point. I mean, we had worked on that for probably almost a year. I can't remember exactly how long we worked on it. I mean, if you talk to Lloyd, he can probably tell you, because we made him the president of it, and it just got to the point that we couldn't get people in, and it just ended up just dying.
Yeah,
and that's what frustrates the hell out of me, is that, you know, people call for paranormal unity, you know, but, you know, when you have somebody like Lloyd that wants to step in and try to help, and you don't want to be part of it, I don't want to hear anything about it. It's more of a, you know, it just seems like it's more of a cliquish base of getting together and partying and being around with people that are like-minded, but you're not one.
Well, patting each other on the back and saying, you know, that's a great shot, or whatever. I mean, they don't want to hear somebody say, well, you know, maybe not. They really don't. You know, they don't want to hear that.
Yeah, exactly. And another thing is when you post evidence, okay, so you got a shot. You're asking for, opinions. Right away, if the opinion goes against what you think it is, mm-hmm. then all of a sudden, not only do the arguments ensue, but they're personal arguments. It's not even an argument on the topic. It's mm-hmm. you're ugly and your mother dresses you funny. I have no respect for that. I have none. You know, I mean, it's, you know, if you're wanting to peer judge, you should be open to all aspects. I mean, you know, right. I mean, let's be honest. When you're throwing it open to the net, you got a lot of strange people on the net. There's probably more trolls than there is anything else. They love mm-hmm. watching people just going at each other.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. And then you have the camps of, like, if somebody says something bad about, you know, somebody, then they have their camp of supporters, and then it's this.
Oh, yeah, then it's camp versus camp.
You solve
absolutely nothing besides starting to delete people and stuff like that because you get tired of the bull crap.
Yeah,
you know, I just
the bullshit. You can say it. We're online.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
You can say that. Just not the F-bomb.
But, oh, well, that was going
to
be my next
word.
Because
I'll have to smack your fingers. No, yeah, no. What, I mean, but you're right. Okay, I mean, look, you know, I think about it, I look at it, like, who's somebody everybody respects, okay? And then you kind of got, it's kind of hollow or a little porous there, because I would think somebody like, if he was alive, Ed Warren, and then, you know, the old hands, like Zathis, and, you know, Auerbach and Kaczmarek, you know, the other ones that were like in the 70s. Well, you know, people like that could sit and had different experiences. And some actually people, you know, that had nothing to do with paranormal, maybe engineers and stuff like that. If they, you know, if the teams think what they're doing is good and they are confident in their evidence and their analysis of it, then they should hold it up to scrutiny. They should show it. I mean, what if one of these teams really does have proof of something? I mean, seriously, what if?
We never hear about it
because they're posting like, you know, I hate you and you're an idiot and you have a glass eye and you look like a goat.
Yeah.
I mean, we never hear about it. But if they don't, if it doesn't, you know, congeal like that, then where are you going to go with this?
I don't disagree.
No, I know, but it could be out there, you know, something that would be very well could be.
But you know what really is frustrating? Mm-hmm. Even if you have a great shot, nobody's going to believe you anyway because it's so easy to fake a shot.
Mm-hmm.
Between apps and applications.
Yeah.
That's
unfortunate too. Right.
It is unfortunate. It is. At least with, you know, old school stuff with the SLR cameras and 35mm film, mm-hmm. you could send it off to Kodak and they can verify the film for you.
Absolutely. All right.
But if you don't have the original file that came from on your camera, mm-hmm. You have no way to look at the EXIF file to see if what it is and what and how it was shot and all that other stuff. Usually when you transfer that to other mediums, you destroy the EXIF, so you're screwed. You got no way of verifying it.
Yeah.
I try to explain that to folks and they tell me to go crap in my hat. Well, I'm just like, you know.
Yeah.
I don't know what I'm talking about. Okay, fine.
Then you get those, I was gonna say about my camera. I have an old. I have a Minolta SLR 35mm manual.
I still shoot with 35mm.
Well, yeah, for a while it kind of went out. Thank God for the hipsters because now it's all back in. But I need some repairs done on mine. But that concert, that camera went. I loaded in the dark. Mm-hmm. You know, at Led Zeppelin concerts, at this concert and that. So it's, you know, if it's on the negative, it's there. Or if it's on the mm-hmm. negative, it's in the picture and it's not on the negative, maybe. Okay. But the negative film is something hard hard, you know, like hard ware that you can hold in your hand and say, well, what the hell is that? And blow it up and send it off, like you say, for examination. Digital cameras, the digitals are terrible because you'll see people, look at that ghost going up the stairs at the hotel in Texas or whatever.
It's a human being.
Like they're moving so fast that it's a digital blur, right? But that's a ghost. And so suddenly it's on TV.
Right. Well, the digital age is instant gratification.
Mm-hmm.
So you can take your shot. It's right there. Okay. Mm-hmm. So, I don't know, man. It's just, you try to tell people to back stuff up with, the old school stuff because it's easier to verify. And then you get told that, well, it's 2017 now and we use digital. Okay. Well, all right. Well, don't expect people to listen to you if you're going to be showing stuff.
Back in the day in the 70s, you know, when Hans Holzer and those were the people and Ed and them, what did they think they were using? They were using reel-to-reel recording tapes or cassettes, magnetic tape, right, on cassettes. And they were either using Polaroid cameras of the old-style Polaroids or they were using cameras, negative film cameras. And the evidence
Sarah Eastep was doing her EVP stuff. That was reel-to-reel or shoebox recorders.
Absolutely.
And that's when if you got something, usually an A-class EVP, you didn't have to make it sound like a robot and guess what you were listening to. Uh-huh. It was an EVP.
Yeah.
I mean, listen to her. Listen to her stuff.
It's something anomalous on the magnetic tape. Just the idea of impressing it onto either reel-to-reel tape or, Super 8 film even. It's weird, but they're not purists, I guess. I guess they didn't cross over into whatever came back in style. Mm-hmm. But this digital stuff is the undoing of a lot of stuff, you know. And then
it is.
The shows on TV accept anything. Like, if it shows anything. There was a piece of... Let me back up. Just tonight, there was a post that I put on Facebook, and it was allegedly a woman in Britain who took pictures at the hospice where her, it's on my page. I don't know if I tagged you. I tagged so many people. But anyway, she was supposed to have taken pictures at the hospice where her father was passing away at the hospice. Mm-hmm. And it's this hallway, and now this was supposed to have occurred a couple of years ago, and now she's coming forward with them, and she explains it as a gatekeeper and a raven, okay? So it's a blurry shot of one end of the hallway.
A gatekeeper and a raven?
Yeah, a gatekeeper, okay? The thing at one, okay, so the one end of the hallway, like you're standing in the door and you shoot left. You can see the raven. I would say the Raven's Photoshop. The thing at the end of the hall is blurry. And it could be, she thinks it's a hooded figure with a book. And what is death that's showing up and checking it off? You know, like, who am I picking up at this hospital? I got to check. It could be anything. It could be a stretcher. It could be a laundry bin, a food cart. And the point, my friend Jerry asked me on Facebook, what do you think? I said, I'm wondering why she's taking pictures of empty halls and they're blurry.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, and she said, oh, it was a gatekeeper coming to get her dad. And then the other thing I said, look, if that was at the end of the hall and a raven while my dad was dying, my dad wouldn't be in that hospice anymore. I'd have carted his ass out of the hospice. It's blurry.
Come on. We deal with energy, okay? There is no gatekeeper. That's a man-made construct of what you think that, death is. You deal with energy. You know, energy comes, mm-hmm. energy goes. Yeah, you can get energy. Something intelligent showing itself and so forth and so on. But a gatekeeper with a book? Oh, please. Yeah.
Rounding the corner. When Jerry asked me that, I said, my first question is why she took a picture of an empty hallway. And then the raven, you can see it's a wheelchair, like kind of tucked in a little alcove out of the way, you know.
So you're trying to tell me that's Edgar Allan Poe?
I don't know. Or, you know, well, the raven is the raven. She thinks it's a gate. Why would a gatekeeper and a raven show up?
Metaphorically, a raven is death, isn't it?
Well, it is. It's associated with death. The raven, the crow, the owl, those are all things associated with death and passing over and Plutonian influences and stuff like that. And that's why I said, if I saw those two things in the hallway when my dad was in the hospice, he'd be rolling out the door. Okay. It would just be like, he ain't staying in this hospital. But I mean, why? It's just a mentality. Why would you think that black raven and that hooded thing are good in any way? You know,
I would ask the nurse to shoot it out the house, out of the place.
Could you see that? Yeah. Going around with salt water and whatever, but it wasn't real. Yeah. I don't think you'll have to look at it to see it later, but it's too perfectly, when everything else is blurry, it's kind of perfect. And, you know, they Photoshop everything, anything and everything they Photoshop. And I just said, he's too clear with the rest of the pictures blurry. And my first thing is, what the hell is she doing in the hall taking pictures of the hall? I mean, I could see if she was like taking pictures of a relative and this showed up behind them, you know, in the hall. But it's like, you know, I don't take a picture in an empty hall unless I'm looking for something like that, you know, or accidentally. But she's like, definitely, she took pictures of the hall while her dad was in the room dying. Come on, you know, and that's where... Yeah. It comes in that anybody can be a paranormal investigator. Anybody with a camera and a digital recorder and a black t-shirt and jeans.
Well, see, that's what frustrates me too. You know, I can't tell you how many emails that I get about people asking me, you know, how they could become a paranormal investigator. They want to do that for their job and stuff like that. Folks fail to realize that, you know, you don't make money at it. A handful of people get lucky, and if their series goes past the second series, you know what I'm saying, the second year, then you start making some money towards it. But most of the time, you have to have a full time job. I mean, for Christ's sake, you know, Lloyd has to have a full-time job, and he's he's a degree parapsychologist.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so if, you know, if he's struggling, you know, what makes you think that you're going to be able to do anything outside of, you need to have a full-time job? Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, I'm a hypnotherapist. I'm a private investigator. I'm still a parapsychologist. I'm not, you know, I don't charge people, but still, you know, there's no money in it. There's none.
No, because immediately if you start, they say, oh, you're taking money for it. But then all of their heroes take money for it, right? I mean, they were ghost hunters, okay, Jason and Grant and that team. At the end or near the end, at some point, Jason crossed the threshold at 62 to 65,000 per episode. That guy is a millionaire more than one time over. And the vast majority of what they show as science or what they show as methodology on there is fake. It's bullshit, a lot of it. Right. And the reason it's bullshit is that not because they intentionally are faking it. They have producers telling them, we need this. We need something that looks like this. That's how
drama sells soap.
Right. Yeah, and Grant Wilson got caught with and had like a crisis of whatever, faith or whatever.
Oh, you're talking about the shirt?
Yeah,
shirt
the shirt with the hook on it and they're pulling the shirt up. Yeah, I mean, I could sit there at home, you know, drinking hot chocolate and it's cold outside and look at the one where they have a shadow running up the gallery at the Eastern State Penitentiary. Mm-hmm. And I can see a tennis shoe and a khaki pant leg, you know, and I'm like, That's as fake as it could be. Wait, what?
Was that Brian Harnois with that?
Yeah, that run dude
or whatever the hell it was.
Yeah, dude, run. Mm-hmm.
Dude, run. Yeah. And,
I mean, I'm not here to indict people. Now, you know, but he went off the rail.
That's okay. Brian and I don't have a good relationship. I'm not really worried about it.
Well, no, I mean, but he kind of went off the rail there, which from my perspective if you're around a lot of allegedly haunted locations that probably really are, okay, and you're not thinking, you're not in the right frame of mind that you believe you can actually, that it actually is, and you can be influenced by it, and you're just there to, you know, tug on shirts and, you know, say, oh yeah, this place is haunted. Well, then things get attached to you, and they were on for a decade. They're actually on for 10, 11 years, totally, you know, and I would imagine that some of them, you know, had things attached to them. I mean, Brian kind of just went off the rail. And on Paranormal State, Ryan Buell, I mean, you know, that's a sad story over there. And it seems like either you toe the line and you have season 5, 6, whatever, or you don't, and you try to stick to what you know and what's right. Your show is canceled, you know? I mean, seriously. I can't speak out of school, but anybody can remember that Ralph Sarchi had a show called The Demon Files, and there were only 3 episodes. And
who?
If anybody, Ralph Sarchi, the
oh,
Demon
Ralph, Files, oh Ralph, yeah,
Deliver Us from Evil. Well, there were only 3 episodes.
Ralph's a good guy.
He is. He's a great guy.
I've talked to him a couple of times on Facebook. He's a good guy.
I mean, I needed help
his
with
heart's,
a friend
of mine. His heart's in the right place.
Right, but I mean, he didn't ever tell me anything about it, but I knew they were wanting him to be, like, I was surprised he was in a team situation, you know, so they wanted him to have a team, and they wanted, it was just like everything else. I was really surprised because I thought it would be him and just to the, you know, the couple guys that he works really close with. 3 episodes in, I'm pretty sure what he did was walk away and say, I'm not, you know, I'm not here. So you can have entertainment.
That wouldn't surprise me with Ralph. Right. I mean, he's pretty stand up guy. I mean, I'm not trying to speak for him because I would never
me
do
either,
that.
But I could see
him doing that.
Got 3 yeah. episodes, you know, and I know it wasn't.
Let's be honest too. You don't really know what the contracts say. Mm-hmm. You don't know how long a person signs a contract for. You don't know what the contract you know, allows them to do or not do. You know, I'm sure with the guys in Ghost Hunters, I'm sure that they're probably wrapped up with a non-disclosure agreement until maybe until their grandchildren have children or something.
Right. Probably.
You know, who's to say? I mean, and you don't know what contract that they signed and how long it was. Maybe Grant got out at a good time during renewals. Who knows?
Yeah.
You know, you don't know what the other guys signed. You don't know how long they signed at what time.
Right.
You know, so they might have not wanted to do it, but they had to be contractually obligated.
Yeah, there's a certain amount. Once they knew it was a success, and it hit right at the right time. It really did. And I mean, I used to watch it and go, ooh, you know, and all this other stuff. I mean, I knew some of it was fake, but you know, I watch anything that's creepy just to hear the story and stuff like that. But you know, it became, even by like the first season, I was like, you know, they're seeing somebody on a FLIR down in the locker room at some location, and the guy walks, or whatever it is, walks closer to the camera, and he's got a baseball hat with Taps written on it, and you can see it. It's, you know, and then later you see him walking around, whoever the team member was. I was like, come on. People think that they're like Moses and Abraham. Okay. That's like, you know, they're the thing. It's all scripted. It's all pushed so that it can be as entertaining as possible, because nobody's going to sit there and watch people for an hour sitting in a room for 4 hours condensed to an hour, you know, and recording stuff or, you know, are you here? Give us a sign.
How many times have you worked an investigation that the investigation is 4 hours? I've worked on cases that lasted over a year. Mm-hmm. All right. So, you know, for investigations being 4 to 6 hours, it just doesn't work that way.
Right.
Some places, sometimes you go there and you get absolutely nothing. You can get absolutely nothing for 6 months and all of a sudden you get something. Mm-hmm. So yeah, of course, you're right. I mean, they have to script something. They have to have something in there, or else nobody's going to want to watch somebody sitting in a room going, I got nothing, man. you can't sell soap for that. You can't do anything. Who's going to turn in?
Tune it in. When I used to go on investigations with Bernadine and the team, she would always bring snacks, okay? And the snack, it's like a tub, you know, one of those tubs you get from Walmart. It was heavier than the equipment, right? And so I would be like, okay, I'm so bored, okay? I mean, I would get bored. And there's a couple of us that would like fall asleep. And so I end up sitting at the quote unquote command central eating. So I'm like, I'm gaining weight, you know, I'm not going to be here.
I've fallen asleep on a sofa before, you know, during surveillance. You sit there watching, you know, watching your cameras. Next thing I know, I'm jerking back, and it's like 30 minutes, 45 minutes have gone by. I'm like, shit, I fell asleep.
just when you were going to capture something. I mean, that's good to have cameras to go by. And then a lot of people don't think about how much goes into the after product. You know what I mean? So you sit there and you may have a year, or you may find something in a month, a couple of times going back, whatever. Somebody's got to sit down there and watch all of that.
And that's another thing I tell teams is that only record what you're willing to sit in front of. Mm-hmm. You know, and that's why, you know, when I got my guys sitting in front of a monitor, I have them take notes. You know, if you think you see something, write it down so you can fast forward to that point and we can look at what you're seeing. That's the whole reason why you're sitting there looking at the monitor. Other than that, I could put static cameras in and let it run for 2 hours or 4 hours, but I'll be damned if I'm going to sit there and look through 2 hours or 4 hours worth of stuff unless it's just a really hot area. I mean, like EVP sessions, putting down an EVP, a recorder for 2 hours. It's more efficient to do an answer session, question and answer session.
Unless you really creep, you like to be creeped out by noises, you know, I mean.
No, yeah. And let's be honest, you listen to something, you listen to air for any longer than a half hour, you're going to start thinking you're hearing things because your mind is trying to make sense out of chaos. So then you're starting to lie to yourself because you think you hear something.
Mm-hmm.
I'd rather do the question and answer session.
Yeah, and get straight to. Well, but what do you, you brought that up. What do you think about white noise?
White noise when you're recording. Mm-hmm. I don't think you need to really put it into the area unless you're thinking that it's going to charge an area to add extra energy to it.
No, I was saying no, not to charge an area, but let's say I read about someone who used basically like I don't know, they called it like an Air Force radio where it had all these it wasn't shortwave, but it had these multiple air channels where it was like shh the whole time. It was the typical white noise, the hissing. And, you know, I don't think it energizes, but I think it can be manipulated, in other words, into work. Not right away and not on the first try, but, you know, I don't think,
you know, I'm willing to try something out. But my initial thought when you're asking me is that I think it's just I think it's adding more background noise, and I think you're going to screw up what you're trying to do
because you want to try to get when they do the box, you know, when they do the AM channel scan, they have all these stupid names for them. Okay.
Yeah. Well, and I'm not a big fan of the boxes anyway.
They have some new one that sounds like it echoes.
Yeah, I heard.
My daughter, when she was young, they used to have these. You could buy them at Toys R Us. They were these microphones that if you talked into them, it went rah, 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 like you were, you know, whatever. You were playing like.
Yeah, what they're doing is they've got one of those radios that they make so that it does the scans, and they got that plugged into a noise gate to try to take the hiss down. And then they're adding an echo chamber or some reverb or something to, I don't know. I'm thinking that they're trying to bring out, the conversation a little bit more than it just being short and choppy. But to me, honestly, I think it's, I don't know. I don't agree with it, man, because you know you're dealing with chopped radio, you know, radio signal. So yeah, you're going to get what sounds like the sentences and stuff because you're going across stations, and then people are listening to it because they want to hear communication. It's not a question of trying to get some communication, and it's not a question of trying to get researchable points. You know, I watched an ITC session, a live one, a couple of days ago from, I can't remember who it was. And, you know, and they're just, you know, saying, well, I hear Lucifer, I hear this, I hear that. It's very subjective because you're wanting to hear something. And then a lot of folks that are doing it too are very suggestible to this because they want to believe, they want to hear, so they make themselves hear. Mm-hmm. I rather just have a plain old EVP session, question and answer, try to get as detailed as possible and look at research, researchable points if you can get it. And to me, that makes more sense than listening to a broken radio. I'm sorry, that's my opinion.
And not just radios. They have those little pulse things, you know, that they put around on the ground and all. And it's just constant, you know, but it's like supposedly kicked on when the spirits are around or whatever. I don't know.
I don't know. I mean, you know, right. And I'll be honest, you know, I would want to experiment with it, but I would never use it for real data because it's prototypical equipment. It's untried. I don't care how many times you go out and tried it. And if you try to tell me that it's scientific, the pure scientific community will laugh at you.
Yeah, they are. They do.
I'm sorry. I mean, you know, I'm all for trying to get data up and looking at the trends and understanding all of that. Hey, I'm all for it. But, you know, do what makes sense. I mean, come on. I mean, a lot of the stuff that comes out now, I think it's a lot of people taking advantage of folks in the field. And I think they're just making money off of some of this stuff. Mm-hmm. Not all of it, but some of it.
I agree. They have to be because there's such a proliferation of it. Have you ever been like watching, I don't know, I'm not going to name any names, but watching where they're reviewing, they may be doing it right away or whatever. And they say, and they'll even print it at the bottom of the screen, what it's supposed to sound like. And you know, you heard something and it's completely different than what they heard. And what you heard is probably creepier or more meaningful than what they say they heard. You know, how do you get that out of that? How do you get egg out of elephant or something?
it's all subjective as well. When you take an EVP and you've cleaned it to the point that it sounds like a robot, and then you're telling me what you think it is. If you know, maybe you're telling me it says Bob goes to the store. Okay, well, you're giving me an audio cue, so now my brain is looking for Bob goes to the store on this mm-hmm. thing that you're making me listen to. You know, if you want somebody to get, if you want to get a true thought of what an EVP is, you don't tell people what it says. Say, listen to sample A, listen to sample B. What do you get from it? If you get people, if you get, you know, 10 people saying, hey, man, it sounds like Bob goes to the store without you saying anything, then you got something. If you're giving an audio cue of what you think it is, you've just screwed up your data.
Yeah.
You can't tell me different.
Right. Right. Because they'll never hear anything else. That's a good way. I mean, that's a good way to isolate it, you know, I can't, there's so many teams out there. There's so much on the internet and all, and I'm going to stick in the area of everything is debatable. Everything, unless you are willing to put your theory to the test, unless you are willing mm-hmm. for somebody else to prove the axiom that you think, right? I mean, mm-hmm. be scientific. I mean, we now have science telling us that they are in contact with or interacting with dark matter energy in our magnetic sphere. Mm-hmm. Now, you know, as long ago as I don't even, I mean, back to the, you know, Babylonian astrologers, everybody knows that there's things in the magnetic sphere. But to have science come out and say, we're interacting with it, we can't call it anything else but an entity because it's interacting with us too. Well, we know, I know what that is. And then they've got CERN, and they're actually doing science to open up stargates to bring what's outside in. And I have, I don't agree with that at all, because it's going to be terrible. But, you know, there is science now turning and looking at, with a little bit more of an open mind, at some of the stuff that these people, you know, that the paranormal researchers have been, you know, gathering, doing, et cetera. So why wouldn't you want to do
Well, one thing that people don't understand is that, you know, looking at, like, you know, the Ryan Research Center and the American Society for Psychical Research and the SPR, there have been people in the field of parapsychology for about 125, 150 years that have been doing this stuff, and it gets ignored. I mean, there's psychiatrists, there's scientists, there's, you name it, have been doing, you know, all this research and all of these abstracts. This stuff's already out there, but nobody wants to look at it because they think, you know, parapsychology is a fringe science. There's a lot of the stuff that were done by scientists. It's a mindset. Yeah. You know, I'm of the frame of mind, okay, that I'd say that I walk the gray. I think that between science and metaphysics, that's our answer. Mm-hmm. You know, and that in metaphysics, you know, I'm also in parapsychology and all that other stuff. It's accumulation of everything. It's just not just science. I mean, because you have to deal with the way that a person deals with their environment with you know, with their psi ability. Because that, you know, a person is the one that is dealing with the events. Okay, so you have the person dealing with the events. Now you have the science find out what the hell they're dealing with. I mean, we don't even know what conscience is.
Right.
So if you don't even know what conscience is, all of this other stuff, you know, is, you know, there's got to be something else there. And the really bad part about it is, you're not going to know until you get there.
Right. And you're not going to find out with a completely closed mind or with, you know, dead set that this is what it is. You can't be so skeptical that, you know, you're not able to, you know what I mean?
No, I understand what you're saying. Well, you can be skeptical, but you can have an open mind. The problem is that when you become skeptical to the point that you refuse to listen to others' thoughts, then you become an island upon yourself, and you don't want to know anything else.
Exactly. Right. And you think you're right. And, you know, so it suffers, the whole field suffers.
Yes, it does.
From the representatives of it. Like you said, there have been these people laboring in the background for years. I mean, this is not like it's nothing new. Spiritualism, you know, people go around. Here's the other nut to crack, okay, with you. And we've talked about this before, but people go around now and everybody's a demonologist, okay? This is like, you know how it goes in like cycles. Everybody wants to be this, everybody wants to be that. But
you're making my brain hurt again.
Yeah, demonologist. If you look up the definition of demonologist, you will see it is someone who studies demons. Nowhere in that sentence is it someone who casts out demons, someone who talks to demons.
A demonologist is not a demonologist is not an exorcist.
Right.
Never has been, never will be.
Who studies demons. And, you know, it is someone that has a place in the occult tradition, because studying demons can bring you into contact with them. It leads on naturally to actual rituals and that scientists have done and proven they actually work. Like, you know, they were written down back, you know, by Arabs and whatever. And then the church, the early church, those things worked. And that's how they found out about demons. Mm-hmm. They considered it studying demons. Then they were demonologists. But this today, you know, you've got people that are 21 years old I'm a demonologist.
Oh,
yeah.
I don't even talk to somebody
really?
that doesn't have some road miles behind them.
Seriously.
I'm sorry if I want
to be a demonologist. Well, then you don't know what the hell you're talking about. Well, then here's a bunch of books. Go home and study. I mean,
and I don't mean to sound rude when I say that.
No,
it's just
I
that
mean, that's just the way it is. It's, you have to earn some kind of stripes. Either you grew up in some kind of a situation that made you want it, like me. You know, I mean, I'm a child of the 70s, okay? I was having fun and stuff like that. But I lived in the most haunted house, one of the most haunted houses I have ever heard of. And, I mean, you know, it's like I wanted, when my mom died and, you know, it took such a toll on her, I just wanted to, you know what it was about. For a while, I didn't want anything to do with it because it's exactly what had led to the hauntings we had and to her illness and, you know, or exacerbated her illness and all. But eventually it was like, well, what the hell did go on? And so now I can say, I just turned 57 years old the other day. I can say, yeah, I got a little road wear on me. I have a lot of experience and a lot of practical study and practice. And so I can tell you, you know, you're 21. You're not a demonologist. You're not even a minister. You know, 21. Yeah. I mean, I don't even know what I was, you know, well, demons were in the back of my mind, but I thought it was something, you know, that I would be putting behind me until my mom died, so.
What frustrates me too, is that, you know, there's a lot of folks out there on teams that, you know, they claim that, you know, well, I've got 20 years in field research. Okay. It's like, okay, well, when did you have your first case? Well, it happened when I was, 18 or 16. I'm like, you mean you're trying to tell me that you've been going out and servicing folks at 16? Get away from me.
And who were those people? You know,
I don't want to mention the team.
Well, no, I mean, yeah, I'm just saying rhetorically.
Yeah,
who the hell
I mean,
let a 16-year-old kid in that caught? Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, it's like you're claiming. Okay, so you know, you're 36 years old now. Your first experience was 16. So you're telling me that you've had 20 years. You haven't even cracked the surface on learning about the history of the stuff, any of the science or anything at that age, and trying to tell me that you've been dealing with, you've been in the field for 20 years. Get away from me.
Yeah.
This frustrates me.
And it should, rightly, because what happens is that becomes emblematic of everybody that's involved in it. You know, it drags everybody down, or it stagnates everybody. And it helps people that don't believe in anything supernatural, or that believe but think these people are a bunch of fools or whatever, to categorize and pigeonhole, how the paranormal researcher should be. You know, should it, and they're thinking Zach Bagans. Okay, I mean, I have nothing against Zach. I have nothing against him as a person or whatever. And the one thing I got to, but listen, Pete, the one thing I do give him credit for,
I'm glad you and I have the type of relationship we can agree to disagree and still be friends.
No, yeah, that's right. But the one thing I will say, look, he did all kind of stuff that I don't agree with, but he did. He and Aaron and Nick did own up to the fact that a lot of the crap that they did previous to that particular, like they were in it for several years when they said, it screwed up our lives and this is how. And they admitted that, okay? They didn't, I mean, it wasn't like, oh, the tell-all, but they said our finances, we lost girlfriends, people got sick. And they admitted that. They didn't go so far as to say our methods might have caused it, but at some point somebody had to think that it would. You know, you don't go, the provoking was the thing that I had the most problem with. The provoking, going in there and, you know, you're going to be a big bully.
I've argued with Zach twice when I used to be on ParaHub Radio. And one of the things was, is that I asked him, you know, okay, so you go into a home and these people are scared as hell and you provoke and you leave, what is your aftercare? And he had nothing to say to me. There was no aftercare. All, you know, all they've done is stirred up any intelligent energy, if it was even there. Mm-hmm. And when they leave, these people are more scared than when they first got there, and they got their shot, and they went home. So, you know, I agree.
No, Pete, listen to me. I do agree with you. Okay, I agree about that part. I'm going to give them a little bit of a star. Okay, a little gold star for admitting that they're lying. because you will not hear ghost hunters admit, you know, or any of those guys admit, oh, you know, it effed up my life, you know. They at least did. And, you know, then one kind of went their separate ways. It doesn't stop them from continuing the way that they are, because they can't put the Lego together to realize that what they were doing was what was causing. But to admit
when he bought the Emmons house and he got done shooting the documentary, he had the house destroyed. Excuse me?
No, he had it torn down. I was going to say right at the same time.
Yeah, he had it torn down. Okay, so now you don't have the area that was under question for anybody else to go in and see if it was right or wrong or indifferent. You took it down, so now all they have is what you say. I cry bullshit.
That's unbelievable. That is, the whole thing was kind of like, what? There were children crawling up the wall. I'm not saying that can't happen. I've seen and heard some weird things, but the whole thing, and then him tearing it. You remember spiritualism, okay, and how big it was, et cetera.
The Fox house, right.
They moved that house. They took the whole house and they put it in Lilydale. To study it, like the center of spiritualist movement in America.
That would have been what you would want to do. If you that you have something here that has a paranormal thing to it, study it. Don't tear it down.
Remember Borley Rectory? They didn't. Eventually, it's torn down now. But remember how much research went on in just that one location? In England, and then again, we were saying the Lily, you know,
Harry Price and Peter Underwood crawled all over that place.
Right, exactly, and they were able to. I mean, eventually, it burned down after the thing, whatever the hell was in it, said, "I'm going to burn this thing to the ground," and it did. So, I mean,
you use that stuff as laboratories. Call in your scientists and find out what the hell is going on.
Exactly. And either I don't want to say, oh, you're completely a sham, or I would prefer to say you missed a big ass opportunity, but I don't think that's it. Why did he tear it down? Oh, it was so bad. Look, you've heard people peddle this too. Even the house where the kid that was, you know, the Exorcist was based on, is still standing, and somebody bought it. Okay. That was the house where it started. It wasn't where it ended. It ended somewhere else entirely.
It was the Cottage Hill house.
The house that he lived on, where he lived in, right, first.
Yeah.
Where's his aunt's house? That was where most of the stuff was manifesting. He came back to the house that they have. It's just a long, but the point is, it's still there, that house. And at one time, it was involved in this major historic possession case. So it's still there for people to go, if they only want to look at it and see it, or go and study it. So why? I don't understand. This was a gold mine. And when I heard he tore it down, I was like, and then they can turn around and say, oh, well, it was so evil, you know? Well, okay. As an occultist, I would say, tore it down. It was that evil.
I don't buy that. I like what you're saying. If it's so bad, then, you know, then you bring in your scientists and you look at it and you find out why, you know, what is causing it? Is it environmental? Is it a mental thing? You know, what is it? You know, study it, isolate it. Don't tear it down
Go ahead. Finish it.
No, go ahead. Go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, you remember the entity haunting in the house that woman lived in, the one with Barry Taff and all those, they made the movie The Entity. You know, the house is actually, I think it's still there. I think the house
is still there.
the entity went with her, and she's dead now. I recently heard her.
She came to Texas. I don't know where she was in Texas.
Was it Plano? I think she was in Plano, Texas. But it followed her. So
which tells me is that it was probably recurrent spontaneous psychokinesis. It was probably something she was manifesting. That's what I would say.
Wait, hang on. Oh, I was trying to text Joe. Joe, can we do it at 10:30? Please. He was asking us a break. I was just going to break at 10:30 and just I wanted to carry you through to 10:30 to Pete. Jeez, everybody with a P, but I'm not saying the right name.
I answered everything, man. Don't worry about it.
Yeah, I know. Me too. But anyway, no, that particular house, it stayed there. And while she was there, the entity followed. But based on the idea of spirit pollution, okay, like it may not be the thing that it was tormenting her. Whatever it is, whether it was a kinetic, you know, projection of her own psychic, but the energy should have attracted other stuff. That's still a place to investigate. Like, what affected that? Did her living there have on an environment, and what's happening now? It could be years of an investigation. But today, it just seems like nobody has any patience for that. And the problem is nobody's going to take anybody seriously at all until they begin. Mm-hmm. To collate and they agree to allow to turn over their pet projects to a neutral eye. You know what I mean? A skeptic, a believer, or whatever. You know, you assemble experts that everybody realizes is experts, engineers, people who are not even involved with the supernatural. You know, if you're not willing to, if you want to just show your evidence and say, this is what I see and this is what it is, well, you know. I don't see that, but if I had a whole 8 people sitting on a board or whatever who did have credentials saying, you know, yeah, that's what it is. I just don't. I don't understand where all of this effort and energy goes. You know what I mean?
Some people spend
years doing this. And you know what? They want to be on TV. They want to be on TV.
As soon as people started making money on TV, it became a commodity. So then, you know, then everybody wants to go, hey, I want to be on TV. You know, I as you just said, you know, I've seen a lot of really, really crappy contracts for a lot of these folks that go on there. They'll say, and a lot of them are just so stupid that if anybody ever signed them, then you should sign them. You know, you give away a lot of your control and your rights, and I mean, shoot, I've seen contracts that Barry showed me on some of the stuff that he got on, you know, that they sign away your editing rights. They can make you look like how they want to make you look like. They can portray you in any way, shape, or form, or your likeness, or anything. I mean, and people sign these things because they seem to think that, you know, getting onto the TV is going to gonna make them a millionaire or do whatever their agenda is. And I'm not knocking a lot of the shows. I mean, there are a lot of good people that worked on those shows. Yeah. I mean, I know some of them. I mean, I know some of them, and a lot of them have a really good heart. And really care about what they do. I'm not knocking them. I am knocking the ones though that try to push the entertainment side and trying to tell me that it's research, when I know for a fact that I'm a researcher. I'm not an entertainer, and you can't tell me what you're trying to show me is research. And the bad thing about it is that the public doesn't know. There's only a small amount of people that are actual researchers. Okay, so those are the ones that get frustrated, and those are the ones that bitch on Facebook and on the net and write stuff, and you know, but the public don't understand. And when if you try to explain it to them, they don't care. They just know that they want to turn out. They want to see what's happening next week, and I can't blame them for that. I can't blame them for that.
They want to watch 40 minutes of being scared out of their mind, or 40 minutes of watching people being scared out of their mind. Because that's what they expect. And you can't blame them because it's entertainment. It's being prepared as entertainment.
But please just know the difference is all I ask. Just know the difference between the research and the entertainment. And that's the fine line that a lot of us out here, try to walk all the time. And, you're going to piss somebody off anyway. It doesn't matter.
Yeah. Oh, well, I mean, I'm like, oh, well, because if you piss them off, then you're touching on something. But, Bernadine and I, I don't go all over the country and all. I mean, I see you're going to be at something soon. We're going to talk about it before you go. But I don't go. Mm-hmm. I don't look to go either. I have commitments that I can't just necessarily walk away from. Mm-hmm. I don't go. But when we do have an opportunity, like here on the show, to talk about stuff, it's mm-hmm. the problem with you're describing exactly what's going on. And so we have those people, the production companies, and then you have the viewing public. Well, out of the viewing public, a fair percentage of those are going to see it for the first time and get inspired to do it. So then mm-hmm. they're mimicking what they're seeing on TV that is being passed as methodology and science and quasi whatever. Mm-hmm. And they're going to repeat doing that. And then they get haunted, or they take one step and they're in quicksand. They don't know what they're fooling, because the overall thing is there really is something out there. Okay. I mean, coming from my own perspective, what I learned as an occultist, I know it because I've seen these things. I've seen them manifested. I've been at rituals where things happen. Those things are real. And so these people are running around out there inspired by, I don't know, maybe those mountain guys. Okay. I have no idea.
Oh my God. Are those the ones that are those the ones that look like the Duck Dynasty folks that walk around with shotguns and build bounce traps?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh man, I never laughed so hard when I saw that one show with them.
I asked Nick Redfern. I said, "What do you think of that show?" And he's like, "It's total fiction." I think they tried to start it off seriously, but they had a bunch of people who just looked like you just can't take them seriously. So they kind of regurgitated and repackaged it as some sort of these hillbillies in the woods type thing. So everybody's watching that. I mean, none of that's real. And so how do you think the Bigfoot people feel? Okay. People who are doing this, the cryptologists, that is the same thing. That show right there with those morons running around out in the woods and all this.
Oh my God. What's that one with the it's a Bigfoot show. I think that the guy's name is Bobo.
You got me. I have no idea.
Okay, it's a Finding Bigfoot or something like that.
I think so. Yeah, because it's different.
I know is I watched one show one time that they were looking at something that there was a video of, I think it was a police car or something that they saw something go across the street. So they were trying to recreate it, and they had Bobo trying to walk across. They damn near killed that guy with that car when they were coming up on him. They almost hit him, and I was like, Jesus Christ, that's science.
Morons in the woods. I mean, I would, if that was me, I'd be the best show ever.
I felt so bad for that guy that night.
Four hillbillies looking for Bigfoot. People would tune in every week. Okay, and just let them be them. Don't give them scripts to follow. Just let them be themselves. They're missing out on it. And that's when a lot of people, have approached us to be in shows and all that. I don't want to be on TV. Come on. I'm a middle-aged, mature woman. I don't look like I did when I was 37 years old. I don't want to be on TV, but what
None
I do
of us
have
look
is
like what we did when we were 37 years old.
Right. And I wouldn't want to watch myself on TV. Right. So I don't want to be on TV necessarily, but I do want to educate people about the fact that what you're seeing on TV is TV, okay? It is TV.
Oh, yeah.
It's not even reality, okay? TV.
People walking around feeling cold and taking pictures. Well, you mentioned that you said that you had seen things manifest on when you were during occult practices and stuff.
Yeah.
I've dealt with for the last 12, maybe 15 years, I've been dealing with most of the poltergeist cases.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So I have seen and I have felt and have been on the opposite end of poltergeists. I mean, I've been hit. I've had stuff thrown at me. I've been bitten. So yeah, I can tell you there's stuff out there. I mean, so it's not, I'm not, when I talk about this stuff, it's not a question of, you know, me saying that I haven't been there or haven't seen stuff. Mm-hmm. I've seen intelligent hauntings too, and like in Galveston, I've seen children and addicts from a 1900 storm house, you know, looking down at me. So I mean, yeah, there's stuff there. What it is exactly, I couldn't tell you. You know, I've dealt with intelligent stuff. You know, yeah, it's all out there. It's all out there. It just scares me though that, you know, when folks just try to emulate TV and don't want to get into the actual study of stuff, you know, I don't want to see them hurt themselves. And I'm not saying that what they're dealing with is going to hurt them. I'm saying, you know, being able to control yourself enough so you can react in a way that you're not going to turn around and walk and run into a tree.
Oh, there was a case, and I wrote about it in my book. It was just a short case, but basically a guy and his girlfriend. And it's a place in, I don't know. It's a place in maybe Canada. I have my book here, but I will be looking for it forever. Anyway, it was allegedly haunted by a monk or a priest who had killed himself. And I think it was in Canada. Anyway, it's this Gothic building and it really looks dramatic and it looks like it could be haunted. Well, this guy and his girlfriend who had been at the bar, right? They wanted to go there and check out to see if they could see the ghosts. And somehow or other, they got on the roof. Okay. And the guy jumped and was able, they were jumping to the next roof over this, you know, like 3 or 4 story drop. He made it amazingly, but the girlfriend didn't. And she died. She fell, you know, 3-4 stories to her death. And another
I'm
case
so
that
to
I talked about,
well,
I mean, it's terrible. Yeah. I mean, I'll let you know what the exact, but there's another case that even kind of went, I think it went to a lawsuit. So, but there was a couple who ran a team. They were investigating a building and the founder of the team and his wife went into the attic and there were bats in the attic. And when they went up there, they started to stir up all, you know, the guano or whatever. I mean, you know, it's on the floor where the bat poop. And they didn't have they didn't have even have masks on, not respirators. The wife got a lung infection and died. You know, I mean, I don't, it's like, you know, wear shoes that nails can't puncture. Don't climb on roofs. You know, that's nothing supernatural. That's stupid.
Well, that's why it is so important to do a preliminary to know what the hell you're going into, what type of safety equipment you need to have, even if it's safe enough to go in. Just because a house is old and creepy looking doesn't necessarily mean it's haunted. And if it is old and creepy looking, and if you got permission to go into it, never go into something you don't have permission to, of course.
Absolutely,
but if you do
go
in, make sure you have yourself mapped out and so stuff like that doesn't happen. I hate to hear stuff like that. It is stupid as hell, but I mean, oh man.
So no, okay, whose fault is that? I mean, obviously it's their fault. But who's to blame? I mean, I'm not trying to indict the whole paranormal thing, but something lit them up. You know, and in other words, like say the whole paranormal thing had
you know what?
A ghost story. Okay, they may have
It's still their fault. It's still their fault.
Yeah,
they should.
Right.
They should have the sense of mind to know what's safe, what's not safe. I mean, I don't care how cool it might be to go into some place. You got to think about stuff. I mean, Jesus Christ, you know it. You can't just go into something just because, hey, let's go in here. We're not Scooby-Doo, okay?
Look, when we were young, you know, we had spooky, you know, you'd ride around the car and all this other stuff. Everybody goes through that.
Yeah, but
and
when we were younger, we had sense. Our parents gave us sense.
My mother was into all this, like doing early EVP type things and all that. It didn't, I thought she was crazy half the time, okay? But I didn't say, ooh, I want to go see the most haunted house in New Orleans where the dwarves live in the basement, okay, or whatever, and go and do the biggest thing that we would do is go knock on the door, ring the bell, which is terrible to admit, but that's what we did, right? But had I been a later generation and saw all of this TV paranormal bullshit, I would want to do that. you know,
you can't let that. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I said if I was stupid, you know, and didn't know what the hell I was doing, but I wanted to be like the ghost hunters on TV, you know.
You know, you can't let stuff like that drive you because we all have intelligence, and I would like to think that. Oh man, you can't just go out and do what you see. I mean, there's you have to think. You have to think about doing things and think about consequences and look for the safety of stuff. I mean, I understand. You know, you only live once and all that other stuff, but. Jesus, you want to be able to wake up the next day. I mean, come on.
Right.
Oh, man.
Let me see if I can actually the cases that we're talking about. I'm looking at my book, but I'll let you know off when we're off air. It's a terrible story. And there are the things like you're talking about, just because a house is supposed to be haunted doesn't mean it's safe. Well, that's true. The thing is, it could be homeless people living in there at night. Go in the day. Tell people that you're going to be there. Tell, you know, have a chain of people that if you're not back, you know, at a certain time, they start looking for you. If you're not back at all, they do this, you know, never go alone.
I got an example for you on that. I was allowed to go into a building that was a historical building here in Houston. I can't remember the name of it off the top of my head. And they basically told me they want, you know, when I asked permission, he said, sure, just, you know, count the doors and windows for me, basically just kind of blessing me off. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I go in there during the day. Okay. Because, I'm not going to go in there at night, but I'm walking around the place and there were homeless folks down there. I saw people walking around down there and they were physical people. So mm-hmm. if you see that stuff during the day, and if you're just walking into something in the middle of the night, you walk up on a homeless guy, you don't even know if he's got a gun.
Yeah, you don't know anything about him.
You don't know anything about it.
Mm-hmm.
And also, what about folks that are breaking and entering in while you're there too? So you come up on them, you don't know what's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
You know, fight or flight. They might beat the holy hell out of you.
But you know, if
you
you're
might,
using
you might
your
turn around, and you might turn around and go down an elevator shaft.
Mm-hmm. That's like, you know, trying to sneak into like St. Louis Cemetery or number one in the middle of the city of New Orleans, right? Well, because so
is,
many
is that
people
where,
went
is
in
that,
and did
is
so.
That where Marie?
Yeah, Marie Laveau.
Is?
Well, so many people did that kind of crap, and some idiot came there and painted it Pepto-Bismol pink. So now you can only go in legally. You can only go in escorted. Well, you can only, somebody. It was
somebody Marie
painted
Laveau's
it pink. Yeah.
Pink?
It was pink. I mean, look, open a jar of pepper.
Oh, that's bad juju.
But it was a guy. Okay. But it was maybe God loves, you know, the stupid, because he was kind of like mental and he wanted to spruce up the tomb. Okay. But he did it with pink latex paint. And all that is like that stucco. It's not even, it's like that plaster that they put over and they just paint it white and all seeped into the plaster.
What happened to people's respect to stuff like that?
He's nuts. I mean, he just wanted to do something. He painted over everything. They had just taken all the X's and everything off and painted it gleaming white, you know, like so Jesus could see it. And he comes in here with the pink and he turned around and he went to Dr. John's grave, not the musician, but the original Dr. John Montanay, and painted his thing pink. So that's when the church, you know, the church runs it, the archdiocese said, that's it. You can only go into that cemetery, that particular historic cemetery, with a tour guide. But, you know, there's a will, there's a way, and people do get over the fence and stuff like that, you know? So, I mean, they're going to go in there and, you know, and poke around and that's not a really a good thing to do in that cemetery, even if the guy hadn't painted it pink, you know, and it wasn't this, you know, you got to know about the area that you're in. Okay. There are voodoo practitioners. So you could be walking in on magic, right. Or walking where it just happened. And it's a bad neighborhood. I don't care if it's a tourist destination, the neighborhood around it.
So if the ghosts don't kick your ass,
Right. You
Brian,
want the ghost.
Brian, who's coming around the corner, is going to kick your ass for being in his neighborhood. Yeah.
More like Tyrone or somebody, to be quite honest. And our crime rate is people die every day down here in New Orleans. It's terrible. Just recently, I mean, they still do it, but there was a spate of people coming up from behind them, hitting people in the head and taking everything from them. And, they run off into areas that they live in that are nearby the French Quarter. So, I mean, you come down here from Poughkeepsie, New York, and you think it's wonderful and magical and all. You know, and next thing you know, you're in the hospital, and God forbid one of you got killed, or, you almost got, or they take you and they rape you and they throw your body out in Bayou Sauvage. I mean, it is like, it's getting like Chicago. It's actually worse. I mean, it actually is. They did a per capita study that we have actually more murders than Chicago. We are the murder capital of the U.S. And we're getting to be like Baltimore and Philadelphia, where they let everything just fall into ruins. It's cumulative. It's 40 years of bad management, putting money in the pockets. And Katrina, the problem is now they want to tear down stuff that survived Katrina. I mean, we lost so much in Katrina, you would think they would leave the rest of the stuff alone.
Well, there are places out there that still haven't recovered from Katrina.
Yeah, I know. There are areas like the Ninth Ward, and there are still areas without streetlights. Out eastern New Orleans, where the crime is the highest. It's like not a priority. And now, this is the best.
I don't get that. I don't get that. Hey, I don't know why.
You know what the NOPD? I always say, look, NOPD means not our problem, dude. And this is what they did recently, just this week. If you can now report your crime online. You go to this link and you bring it up and you can fill out the form and everything. But if you're robbed, if it's some kind of misdemeanor, somebody breaks in your house, right? I'm like, you can go online now and the police don't even have to come, like they were going to come anyway. Okay. This is the laziest police force in the nation. Now,
oh my God.
What are we supposed to do? Make a citizen arrest? Make a citizen arrest and then 5 days
no,
later.
No, what's going to end up happening is people are going to arm themselves and they're going to start protecting their own.
Yeah, but I'm saying, I'd be like, look, online on with the police saying, I'm building a jail in the yard and a stockade, so we can put him in. Or 5 days later, they don't show up. Can you come get this guy? He's eating us out of house and home. I mean, seriously.
He won't give me my TV remote. We need to come and get him.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's either like, they're not even that, it's not that big of a city to do that. Okay. I can conceive of these great metropolises like Los Angeles and New York, where they're overtaxed. This police department is just lazy down here. They would rather shoot the shit on a corner and eat, in front of Pat O'Brien's or with the Mita Maids over here than, enforce crime. Mm. And then, you wonder, and then some of them who are really good people say, no matter what we do, they're killing each other. 3 and 5 and 6 every day, somebody's shot, a body is found. And this is what you don't hear about New Orleans. I have told people, don't come down here. Don't come down here. You're not safe. Unless you're with this huge convention crowd and you have it all planned out in buses and stuff, avoid it like a plague. There's a girl this summer, Pete, that lived in Tremé. Tremé is adjacent to Martin Luther King Jr. Avenue or whatever boulevard. So that gives you an idea. There's one in every city and ours is no good, right? So they're trying to build up the area adjacent, the historic Tremé. And apparently a bunch of people went in there and flipped some houses and now Airbnb is using them, to promote tourism. And then some of them are for sale, like as condos or duplexes. There was a girl somewhere else and she lived down there. I mean, literally right around the corner from the worst possible neighborhood. She's gone. She's gone. She came home and her car was still there and nobody ever saw her again. I don't even know what happened to her. I don't think they ever found her. Could be sex trafficking, but it's a good chance that she's decomposing at the bottom of some canal or something. You see, that's It's terrible. So, and New Orleans just keeps making more ghosts and ghosts and ghosts. You know what I mean? But but a place like, you know, a lot of the places, I think I'm going to circle it back. A lot of the places that are notorious and haunted and scary are in just old neighborhoods because they're old. They have this historic, you know, most of them. But yeah, so that's what's been going on over here. So let me know if you decide to come over here. I'm serious. You know, that's what we were laughing like, okay, you know, what are we going to do? Citizen's arrest. You know, I'm maintaining you. I'm detaining him. Well, good. We'll be there Thursday. Maybe. Come on, NOPD. I'll cook you some red beans. Just come get this criminal. I am so serious. And here, look, wow. This has nothing to do with ghosts. Yesterday I was reading, and I know we're coming up a little bit on the end, and I want to talk to you about where you're going to be. But yesterday there was a letter that somebody had written, a letter. Some woman said that we were too cosmopolitan to be calling, in other words, our po-boys, P-O apostrophe or P-O dash boys. You know what a po-boy is?
It's the same. Yeah.
That we should be calling them poor boys, like they originally were.
Oh, please! Did you tell them to shut the hell up?
Everybody on the thread on wherever it was, I think it was like the Advocate or something online, are like, go to hell, you know. We're not saying po' boys because we're ignorant. And then one woman wrote,
what they're called. I mean, everybody calls them something different. There's
somebody says hoagies
or subways or subs or everything. You know,
to be historically accurate, it originally was called a poor boy because it came about during the Depression. You know, in the early part of the Depression, and they would have the. In fact, my grandfather had a wagon that he would go around and he would feed the guys from the WTA projects. And that's what it is. It's French bread and, you know, it's your sandwich or whatever you're going to have, roast beef or ham and cheese. And they would call it a poor boy because they'd wrap it up and they could, you know, put it under their arm or they could take it with them, you know, and go.
Yeah, and you could eat while you were.
Right. And they were feeding poor people. But it's just, you know, like New Orleans, the good part of New Orleans, they absorb it and make it their own. And po' boy is as New Orleans as beignets. It's as New Orleans as red beans and rice on a Monday. You know, it's like, you don't fool with don't fool with our vernacular. Don't fool with our, you know.
No, that's your history.
Everybody just, I mean, if, you know, I was like, are you kidding? I didn't even get in it. You know, I got to stay off Facebook.
I would have lost my mind. I would have lost my ever-loving mind. My wife would have been pulling me out of there.
I mean, seriously, you know, shut up.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. It's gentrification. But that's what happened after Katrina. All these people come in from somewhere else. And they're going to make the New Orleans that they saw on HBO Treme. They're going to do that. They're going to, you know, they're going to make it like that. So they might as well make it an amusement park, a Disney park. You know what I mean?
Oh, no.
Anyway, I don't know if Joe, I don't know if you're there, but we're coming up on. So you're going to be at some kind of convention coming up.
In March of next. I think it's March. I think it's May. Is it March? May of next year. It's SuperCon. I'll be there at in Iowa.
So, because they just had one, didn't they? I don't know.
Not to my knowledge.
Okay. Anywhere before that?
Serenity Moore is putting this one on. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I think John Zaffis is going to be there, and quite a lot of big names there will be there.
Well, I mean, we didn't have any call-ins, but it's always good to talk to you. So who cares? Great. We covered the whole gamut, and I want you to come back too. So when Bernadine's well, and we can all just shoot the bull doing that.
I love being on your show. I love talking with you and spending time with you.
Yeah, I need to come to Texas over there. But I made I made that little advertisement for you. I even put the creepy Texas flag and everything. Also, I wanted to tell you I'm very sorry to hear about your friend.
Thank you.
I didn't bug you. Yeah, I'm very sorry about that.
Yeah, I knew him since junior high, and it really knocked the pins out. Yeah.
And especially at the holidays, you know, coming up. Yeah. I mean, my dad's going to be gone 2 years next week. So, but when you it's sudden and you hear about it, but yeah, I just wanted to let you know I was thinking about you. So, but
well,
we're
you.
Okay. But yeah, so we're going to be back. We're going to have you back when Bernadine recovers, and we'll do it again. So, if somebody wants to find you, if somebody wanted to get in touch with you, what's the best way?
Let's see. www.lsspi.org or redokipnosis.com.
Okay, redokipnosis. All righty. There's Joe coming in. That was for Halloween, Joe. He cuts in and says stuff. Well, thank you. You know, boredom in action. I don't know. Well, thank you anyway. You have a great weekend, and I'll be in touch. I'm gonna send you that info on the stories I was talking about, the news stories.
I'll send you a message.
Yeah, so you can look up more on them. So, but anyway, have a great weekend, and we'll talk
y'all
to you again
too.
Soon.
Okay.
Thank you, Pete. Bye-bye. Well, okay, we're gonna take a break. You are listening to the Supernatural Substation on the United Public Radio Network. Go listen to some good music as I picked out some Led Zeppelin, and we'll be back shortly.
Yes, demon people.
Yeah. And this. And we're back. And that was Led Zeppelin. We were talking, the Joe Man and I were talking about back in the day and concerts and near misses. And you're talking about the concert that never was at the Superdome. So talk about New Orleans being cursed, unfortunately. So anyone who's still out there, thanks for listening. Thanks for listening to Pete Haviland. Is always he's always got a lot to add. He's always got some good stuff to add to the whole controversy of where's paranormal going next. So I've pretty much said my piece about that. Then it needs to either evolve and allow other scrutiny, or it needs to just go back and wait for its next explosion. 20 years from now, maybe, because this is just personal opinion, but you know, I don't know how many people like seeing the same thing on every show. You almost want to see the fake shows, like, you know, My Ghost Story and all that other stuff where the evidence is just not real, but the story's pretty good, you know, because at the bottom of it is like, everybody loves a good ghost story. Everybody loves being scared. A lot of people say no, and I can imagine somebody like me or somebody that's gone through an explosion of denim and black t-shirts, you know, Levi Jeans was calling them saying, stop, we can't make jeans enough. And we ran out of black dye for the t-shirts. But seriously, they do need a color change there. How about neon yellow so you could see each other in the dark or whatever? But seriously, it exploded, but it's not the only time. Pete and I were talking about people like Lloyd Auerbach and Barry Taff and all. That was the first blush in this modern time. Prior to that, spiritualism and, you know, table tipping seances, etc., even with the Age of Reason and, you know, the 17th and 18th centuries shying away from the superstition of the previous centuries, it still persisted. And that was the time that gave us Frankenstein and Dracula and some of the great gothic horror books that are just iconic at this point. So there's always a place for it. And obviously before then, in the Middle Ages, you've got the priests. You know, you walk into a medieval town, you say you need a necromancer, and they're going to point it to the church. You know, the church gets derided a lot. They like to call us pagan, but, you know, our priests, our lay cleric, et cetera, our lay clerics, there were some pretty brave people, because they get those books from the Near East, the Middle East, the Judaic traditions, and they would do the stuff because they said, hey, we're going to do it like this, and this is going to work, and it would work, and they were unafraid. So if you needed that kind of magic on some dark night, you'd go to the church for it. You know, so people say, oh, this and that. Church was pretty badass back in those days. They knew how to cure elf shot. They knew how to make a woman love you. So it was usually the priest trying to get a girlfriend, like Martin Luther. Anyway, the long and short of it is, it's nothing. There's nothing new under the sun. People always want to be scared, but there's also no reason to stagnate an entire field of inquiry by saying, no, we don't want you to see our evidence because we think it's this and we don't agree. Yeah, so maybe it's coming to that point. I don't know. Anyway, we're going to wrap it up here. I was talking earlier about Terminus. Don't forget, 2 a.m., get creepy. Really creepy. We've got some really good Viking. Just put it on, close your eyes, you feel like you're on a boat or on the TV series. I have a dog going crazy in the background. Miss Bernadine will be back with us again next weekend, which is the 24th. We will be here probably to do a recap or a whole study of one case. December 1st, we have Star Cassis coming up. She's the author of Old Style Conjure. That should be a really good show. December 8th, Lucky Bel Camino, house psychic medium at the Lizzie Borden B&B Museum. James Anito, the demonologist, founder of the Dominion Ministry, he will be here on the 15th. And on the 22nd is Christmas weekend, and we're probably going to have a really good Christmas show prepared for you, and that will take us through the end of the year. So you can listen to us in the archives. We're live also on Spreaker at the same time that we're live here, but you can find our archives on Spreaker, SoundCloud, YouTube. You can listen to us on the iHeartRadio Network. And so you want to get in touch with me other than on Facebook. You can always find me on Facebook if you dare. Yeah, I need to make some New Year's resolutions about avoiding controversy. But anyway, go to my website, ellingpastanio.net. You can buy my books that I was talking about, Risks Incidental and Haunted Tales of Old New Orleans, Volume 1. There's another one that's coming out soon. It'll be great. You can pre-order it maybe one of these days. And that'll do it. That'll do it for this show this weekend. So have a good one. Stay tuned. I think I have some more Zeppelin lined up, and stay for Quantum Leap with Miss Kathy Bilski, because you're going to get high, I guess, in Hawaii. So good night. Have a great weekend.